get to him. She knelt down and touched his hand, which felt cold from the river. "Is he okay? Daniel, Daniel, talk to me!" His face remained white and still. The only movement came from his legs, which were jerking up and down in the flow of the water. The minibus pulled up in a screech of mud, and two staffers jumped out, carrying a first aid kit. Behind them, on the bank, stood Paul and Jane, arms folded, helpless looks on their faces. "He's breathing, isn't he?" she insisted angrily, not believing the alternative, but saying it just to eliminate it. Gareth nodded.
"We need an ambulance."
One of the staff was already on the phone.
"Daniel! Daniel!"
Cherry implored, stroking his cheek with her thumb. She squeezed his hands tightly, as if that might wake him up. When it didn't, she squeezed his arm.
"Don't move him!"
shot out Gareth, and she stared at him, incredulous, none of it making any sense. The sound of sirens grew louder, and then an ambulance flew up to the riverbank, stopping abruptly, its lights still spinning, and two paramedics came running, carrying a stretcher. They took over. As they rolled Daniel carefully onto the stretcher, bluntly telling her to get out of the way, they painstakingly took off his helmet, and Cherry saw another mark, a red circular lesion on his temple. The paramedics expertly packaged him away, simultaneously asking questions about what had happened. Had anyone moved him? How long had he been there? Who was his next of kin? As they deposited him into the ambulance, a red helicopter whirred into view above them, then landed somewhere beyond the trees. Just before they closed the doors, one of the paramedics spoke to her.
"You're his girlfriend?"
She nodded, too stunned to speak.
"The air ambulance will take him to Wrexham Maelor."
"Is that a hospital?"
she asked, but they didn't answer, too preoccupied, or they just didn't hear. The siren started up again as they took him up the hill and toward the helicopter. She still hadn't moved when she saw it rise up into the air, and she didn't know if it was because she had stood there a long time or the ambulance had been extremely quick. But the sight of him being taken away, of the noise of the blades fading into the sky, emphasized the shocked silence on the ground. She shivered, suddenly freezing cold.
"Where is it?"
she said, meaning the hospital.
"We'll give you a lift, or you can follow us in your car," said Gareth.
She suddenly realized she still had to change, and the idea of being delayed a minute more panicked her into action. She started to run back up the hill. 21. Saturday, August 23. Later, Laura would not remember it as being her birthday, although she'd never have another one without brushing up against that wild terror, a sensation of stopped breathing, of panicked, unasked questions, and an overwhelming animalistic need to be with her son. But she would remember it by the smell of roses. It had been a scent that she loved, but that would soon have the power to plummet her into a dark place. Stooped in the garden near the fence, she'd been pruning the deadheads away from the new blooms when the phone rang. She distractedly picked it up, still snipping away with the secateurs.
"Hello? Can I speak with Mrs. Cavendish, please?"
She remembered being mildly irritated, half expecting some marketing company who'd gotten hold of her number, or the dentist calling to remind her of an annual check-up date.
"Mrs. Cavendish speaking."
The voice paused a millisecond, and in that moment it got her attention.
"Mrs. Cavendish, I am a nurse, Nurse Hadley, from Wrexham Maelor Hospital in Wales. I'm afraid I have some bad news about your son."
22. The journey to Wales was agonizing. Every traffic light, every car hogging the fast lane not getting out of their way, every time the autocratic highway speed signs flashed at them to slow to 60, then 40 miles an hour, she would move restlessly, angrily in her seat. The physical pull to be next to Daniel was so strong. If they weren't going as fast as possible, her body started to move itself, as if to make up for it. All the while, Howard sat beside her, driving, a pained expression on his face. She'd had to call him on the golf course, and to his credit, he answered immediately. She never rang, preferring to leave him to it, knowing she was all but excluded from that side of his life. So perhaps he'd known something was wrong. While he was driving back to her, she threw a few essentials, toothpaste, change of clothes for them both, into a bag, then sat in the hall chair when she wasn't pacing in frustration. She rushed out as soon as she heard the car pull up outside, and he didn't even have time to switch off the engine before they were back on the road. The first few minutes of the journey were spent repeating over and over what the nurse had told her, which was very little. "Your son is unconscious after falling from a raft in a whitewater rafting accident. He was currently in surgery,
but she couldn't or more likely wouldn't give any details on why or what, but instead asked them to get there as soon as they safely could. When Laura had pressed for details, anything to try to make sense of it all, Nurse Hadley always answered with the same thing. "It's better that you speak to a doctor when you get here." Although Laura understood why, she felt a deep hatred for her at one point, so desperate was she for clarity and reassurance.
"He's obviously hit his head," said Howard.
"You think so?"
said Laura, although deep down she also believed the same thing. She just didn't want to admit it. He nodded.
"And the surgery?"
Laura's voice trembled. Howard didn't say anything at first, as they both knew that whichever way you looked at it, this was bad.
"We don't know yet,"
he said gently. Laura saw him glance at the GPS again, and shared his anxiety at the time. 2 hours to go, with an estimated arrival of 5:07 p.m. She looked at her watch, where 2 hours on registered 5:05. She could be with Daniel a whole 2 minutes earlier, she thought, before realizing what a ridiculous notion that was. 2 hours was 2 hours. Her watch was just a bit slow. They said the accident had happened at 10:15 a.m., and so Daniel would have been almost the entire day without his family by the time they arrived. Thinking this made her almost shake with a sense of neglect. What if he was waiting for her, for someone to hold his hand? What if the presence of her or Howard at the hospital would make a difference to his surgery? Howard, in a rare moment of tenderness, rested a hand on hers.
"He's in the best place, and they'll be looking after him. And they'll call. They'll call,"
he emphasized, meaning with good or bad news, anything significant. It was at this point that Laura realized he wasn't dressed in his golf clothes, meaning that he'd either changed after she'd called, which seemed highly unlikely considering the urgency, or he hadn't been at golf at all. She didn't answer, just squeezed his thumb, an acknowledgement she'd heard. They were led into a small room, a consultation room that Laura sensed had been used to tell a lot of people bad news, to ask them to make difficult decisions, maybe occasionally to impart something joyful. It felt like a room that had a burden to it. She and Howard stared at the walls, the safety posters, the helplines, and the vase of surprisingly real fresh flowers on the table. They were waiting in silence for the doctor to come and speak to them, having exhausted what little they could squeeze out of what they already knew. There had been no sign of Cherry. The door opened and Laura started. In walked two doctors. Laura urgently scanned the face of the one who led, a kindly, bright Asian woman, trying to read it for news.
"Mr. and Mrs. Cavendish," the doctor said, indicating the chairs. "Thank you for coming so quickly."
Neither sat.
"Where is he? Can we see him?"
asked Laura.
"Very soon, of course, and I know you're anxious to."
She indicated the chairs again, and they lowered themselves into them, as did the doctors.
"I'm Dr. Rayner, the neurosurgeon, and this is Dr. Kennedy, the anaesthetist."
She indicated the man on her right, a gangly redhead who smiled at her.
"We've been looking after your son since he came into hospital this morning. Daniel suffered a head injury when he was whitewater rafting this morning. After investigation, we found it had led to a subdural hematoma, which is a bleed on his brain. We took him into surgery immediately and successfully removed the build-up of fluid."
Laura was trying very hard to concentrate, but her mind kept lurching at the mention of certain words. Bleed, immediately, successfully. She was grasping for meaning, an understanding of the seriousness of what they were telling her, so she could arrive at a point where she could stop thinking the worst.
"He's now recovering in intensive care." "So he's okay?" blurted out Laura.
Dr. Rayner smiled kindly.
"The operation was a success. He's stable, and now we give him time to recover. In order to help him do this, we are keeping him anaesthetized, so that his brain can have a better chance of healing."
"Healing? So it's damaged?"
"I was referring to the fact it's taken a knock, and he's been in surgery. In terms of brain damage, the scans do not indicate that this is the case."
She almost cried with relief.
"Can I see him?"
"Yes, of course. We'll take you and your husband there now. Remember, he won't be awake, and he's going to look a bit different from the last time you saw him. We've had to shave off some of his hair so we could complete the surgical procedure, and he's going to be attached to a lot of machines that are helping monitor him while he recovers. He's also on a ventilator."
"So he's not breathing?"
"Not independently. We'll keep him like this for a couple of days, and then work to get him off ventilation."
Suddenly to Laura, what had seemed horrific but manageable was a whole lot worse. The gangly redhead shifted forward in his seat.
"He can't breathe independently,
because he's sedated to a level that the brain is resting.
Did you have any questions before we take you up to the unit? Laura looked bleak, and Howard took her hand.
Not at the moment. We'd just like to see our son.
Dr. Rayner smiled. I'll take you to him now.
They followed her to a unit, with busy nurses full of low-key banter and practicality, too upbeat, too normal for the seriousness of the situation. Then they were introduced to Daniel's nurse, a woman who received them with a quiet, unfazed confidence, as if she dealt with loved ones' serious head injuries every day, which, of course, she did. Laura braced herself just before the nurse pulled back the white divider curtain that separated Daniel from the other beds on the unit. She could hear the beeps that foretold of her son's presence, and knew it was going to be bad. But the sight of him still hit her like a concrete brick against her chest. Machines held on to him, the wires and tubes entering his body like a plague of alien parasites. It was difficult to see where he ended and they began. They were one mass of flesh and plastic. One side of his head had been shaved completely, the exposed skin deathly white. His face was pale, almost greyish in colour, and swollen as if he'd been in a fight, but without the bruising. The ventilator was fixed into his mouth, making his tongue protrude grotesquely. The plastic and bands that held the ventilator in place cut lines across his cheeks. Across his forehead was a red welt. He lay still, his eyes shut, and after a moment's shocked hesitation, she ran to him and tentatively took his limp hand, touching him the way she would a fragile newborn. She tried to speak, to say his name and let him know she was there, to reassure him. But her voice cracked and she had to stop, not wanting him to know she was losing it. She just let silent tears roll down her face.
"Can he hear us?" Howard asked the nurse.
"We've got no reason to believe he can't," said the nurse. "In fact, we encourage you to talk to him, offer him comfort, even though he can't communicate back."
"I'm okay now. I'm okay," said Laura, through deep breaths, as she pulled up a chair without letting go of Daniel's hand.
She sat without taking her eyes off him. Howard took a chair on the other side of the bed.
"I'll leave you alone for a while," said the nurse, and she drew the metal rings around the rail until they were enclosed, the three of them in a white, beeping bubble.
After a few seconds, Laura heard a stifled choking sound. She looked up to see Howard crying, his hand in a fist and pressed against his mouth, trying to suppress the noise. He shook his head and squeezed his eyes between finger and thumb as he wiped away the tears. The last time she'd seen him cry was the night Daniel had been born. He'd finally come into the world at 6 in the morning after 24 hours of excruciating labour, complicated when Daniel's heart rate had dramatically dropped, which had resulted in an emergency caesarean. She'd lain exhausted, dazed, and Howard, sitting in the chair by her bed, held tiny Daniel while tears suddenly streamed down his face.
"I'm sorry," he said,
embarrassed, as he hurriedly tried to wipe them away, but they kept on coming.
I thought, you were going to die, or he..."
Laura had known what he'd meant. It couldn't happen again.
"Hush, we're fine now," she'd said,
and it had been a moment of closeness, of the three of them, Howard at his most raw. It was a Howard that she knew only she could see, and that no one could take away from her.
"I'm just so happy,"
he'd managed to spill through the tears, and she'd smiled, full of love for him.
"Are you okay?"
she said softly over the bed. He nodded.
"Sorry."
She wished she could once again tell him it was all going to be fine. The nurse came back in and started to check Daniel's IV fluids, and Laura watched silently. They'd been told the nurse stayed with him all the time, and she was grateful. After a moment, she turned to Daniel and started telling him about her day. Awkwardly at first, for she was unused to his bleeps, his silent responses. When she faltered, Howard came in. After a while, they got up a good rhythm, each supporting the other. After a couple of hours of keeping up a cheerful run of nonsense, the exhaustion started to set in. It was then that another nurse subtly drew back the curtains and spoke the words Laura had been waiting to hear.
"Someone's outside who would like to see Daniel. Cherry?"
Laura stiffened.
"No," she blurted out. "I don't want her here."
Howard glanced at her, but she refused to budge.
"I'll go and see her," he said.
"Tell her we want his things."
Howard nodded and left the cubicle. Laura held her son's hand tighter and silently vowed to stay at his side all night and all the next day if it kept Cherry away from him. Something that she knew was unfeasible, but what she could do, as next of kin, was stop Cherry from visiting. She burned with a deep emotional rage when she thought about her stupid little plan of one-upmanship, and how in order to score a point, she'd ended up putting Daniel in the hospital. She wanted to know what had happened, but she couldn't stand to see her. Whenever she pictured Cherry's face, Laura felt such a blind anger, she lost all rationality. Laura knew that if she was in the same room, she'd not trust herself. Howard would find out. 23. Time had a funny way of magnifying anxiety. Cherry sat in the coffee shop, nursing her third cup, and would occasionally look up at the clock and get a flutter of apprehension when a largest chunk, more than a 5-minute block, had passed. She'd escaped down here, at about the time she thought Laura and Howard would be arriving, to think about what she was going to say to them before she went back up. The day had been long and nightmarish. She'd come out of the changing rooms to find the police waiting outside, apparently a routine procedure when an ambulance had been called to an accident. Gareth had already spoken to them, and she felt a chill of fear. It was an accident, hitting Daniel on the head with her paddle. But it wasn't that which had propelled him out of the boat. It was the waves. The river was clearly too swollen, too dangerous to ride, and she felt a stab of anger toward the cocky Gareth with his patronizing jokes. She'd driven Daniel's car to the hospital, followed by the police. When they arrived, the nursing staff told her that he'd had to go straight into surgery, but they wouldn't say why or give her any details, something that worried her even more. So she had no further reason to delay talking to the police. She gave her version of the events, tearful as she relived the accident. Then it was over. They asked if they could call anyone for her, get a friend to come and sit with her, but she'd refused. After she'd assured them she was okay, they left, saying they would be in touch again. Cherry was now free to go over her thoughts. She allowed the ripple of guilt to come to the surface, to examine it, and see if it had any credibility. She knew she should have paddled when Gareth had shouted his instruction at her, but for a split second she couldn't be bothered. This had possibly had a bearing on where the raft had gone to next, to a section where the rapids were particularly violent. That might have been what caused her to throw her paddle up in the air and hit Daniel. Perhaps this had unbalanced him so he'd not be able to stay in the raft when the wave hit and threw him out of the boat. Perhaps in striking him she'd knocked his helmet so that his head was unprotected at a crucial point when it hit the rock. Perhaps. But it was all conjecture, she reasoned with herself. No one knew if her apathy had started the chain of events, if one thing had actually caused the next. None of it could be proven, and she'd said none of it to the police. They had asked her about the blow to his forehead, and genuinely tearful and remorseful, she'd told them her paddle had flipped upward out of her control. They themselves said that his helmet had been dislodged, but it could have been the fall onto the rock that had done it, not her. Secretly, she was relieved the blame could not be laid at her feet. She thought about poor Daniel lying unconscious on the rock, and wished with all her heart that she'd done as she was told, paddled when asked. Then perhaps they'd be at home now, back in his flat in London, making dinner together. She'd gone to check at the desk, to see if there was any news on his progress. She was relieved to hear the operation had gone well, and he was now recovering. A doctor would come and speak to her, and then she would be able to go and see him. In the meantime, Laura and Howard had been called, and were on their way. Cherry timed her afternoon. She'd have 45 minutes with Daniel, and then she'd come back to the coffee shop, give his parents some time alone with him. When she first saw him, she'd been rocked at how he looked, how suddenly vulnerable and dependent. It upset her more than she expected, and it reinforced how much she'd fallen for him. Cherry finished her coffee. She'd been sitting so long she'd gotten to know some of the other people waiting. There was a young couple, the woman heavily pregnant and looking exhausted. He had a permanent excitement about him, and would every now and then knead her lower back with his thumbs. Then there was a late middle-aged woman, dressed well in a cream coat and amber silk scarf. She was alone, but somehow this didn't suit her. She looked like the sort of woman to always be with a husband. Cherry had spotted a ring and wondered if she was here to see him. Both had been here as long as she had, and they felt like comrades, each with her own vigil, but united by an essential need to be in the hospital. They'd caught each other's eyes, the pregnant woman, when her devoted husband had gone to get a refill. She'd sighed and sat back, her hands around her enormous belly. The middle-aged woman, with her hands around her warm cup. Both had smiled. Cherry stood nervously. It was time to go back to the unit. The nurse looked up as she approached and said that Daniel's parents were with him and she'd let them know Cherry was here. When she disappeared, Cherry tried to imagine the conversation that was going on. She was not surprised, but nonetheless still perturbed, to see that Howard came back alone.
"Hello, Cherry.
Can I see him?" He put a hand on her shoulder and led her away.
"Not right now. Why don't we go and get a coffee?"
They went back to the place she'd vacated all of 5 minutes ago, but somehow in the time she'd been away, her allies had left. This threw Cherry. She felt deserted, and it made her even more nervous. She sipped at her fourth cup of the day, and feeling like a child awaiting a reprimand from the head teacher, she waited for Howard to speak.
"How are you doing?"
It was a good sign, his asking after her. Made her think they were on the same side. "Fine. Okay. I'm still a bit shaken up, but it's Daniel I'm worried about."
"We all are,"
he said brusquely. She nodded, her earlier optimism evaporating.
"What happened out there this morning?"
Cherry told Howard the same story she told the police. Once again, she cried when she mentioned the paddle that hit his head. She hated saying this bit, as she felt it incriminated her. She made it clear, conversationally, that it wasn't the blow that caused the injury. At the end, she was expecting questions, but Howard just stirred his coffee, and it unnerved her. Did he believe her? She could hardly ask him, for doing so would suggest that she might have been lying. He looked at her.
"Do you have his bag? His things?"
Cherry had forgotten about them. She'd hurriedly grabbed them from the locker at the rafting center and stashed them safely in the holdall they'd shared. She had felt a sense of responsibility and care for looking after them. She'd assumed she would be the one to do so, and it felt odd to give them up. She hesitated, but he continued to look at her, so she retrieved the holdall, which she'd been carrying around all day, from under the table. "There's both of our things in here."
"You keep the bag."
She pulled out Daniel's personal possessions and handed them to Howard over the table. He took them and placed them on the chair next to him. "I need to find somewhere to stay. The nurses said he's going to be here for a few days at least."
"I don't think Laura's going to let you see him. Not for a while."
Stunned, she stared at him. "She can't stop me."
"I'm afraid we can, as his next of kin."
The hurt deepened. "You too?"
"My wife is already extremely upset over this. Minimizing her stress can only help Daniel to get better."
"What about me?"
"It's just for a while, until he's got through the worst."
Cherry blazed with anger. "She doesn't seem to understand that I love him." He watched her for a moment.
"Did you book this weekend to deliberately upset my wife?"
Her eyes flashed to the floor.
"Because if you did, then you don't love him that much, do you?"
She sat numbly as he got up.
"Are you going to take Daniel's car back to London?"
She shrugged, "I suppose."
"Drive carefully,"
he said kindly. She watched as he walked away, Daniel's things under his arm, clothes, wallet, phone, flat keys. She had effectively been dismissed. 24. Wednesday, August 27. "From his scan, we believe he should be regaining consciousness," said Dr. Rayner. She waited while this news sank in. They were back in the consulting room. It was early morning, and the sun was streaming through the window, making the dust spin in the light. Dr. Rayner was compassionate but professional, passing on facts without embellishment. Laura and Howard were exhausted and frightened. Laura had spent 3 days at Daniel's bedside, and then last night the doctors had stopped the sedation. At some point over the following 12 hours, he should have come round. Laura's voice sounded small, shriveled.
"So why hasn't he?"
"We don't know yet. We'll start investigating this morning. He'll have another scan, and we'll also perform brain EEGs and other test activities."
"How long will it all take?"
"We'll have some results in later today, but I must warn you that they may not give us the answers we need," Dr. Rayner said gently. "The brain is very complex, and sometimes it takes a while until we find out exactly what's stopping someone from coming out of a coma. Sometimes they recover before we do find out."
Can you tell how long he's likely to stay like this?"
Laura felt Howard put his hand gently on hers. "I'm afraid not. We just don't know. The good news is that he is breathing unassisted, so he's off the ventilator." Laura nodded, but she couldn't help feeling these were scraps of good news. small things to cling to when the bigger problem loomed large and dark. Dr. Rayner's beeper went off, and she looked down at it. It was clear she was required somewhere else. They could have kept her, but there didn't seem to be anything else to say.
"Will you keep us updated, Doctor?"
said Howard. "Of course I will. As soon as we have any news, I'll be in touch. Can I suggest that you take a rest for a couple of hours? Have a change of scene?" He nodded just to close off the conversation, but neither Howard nor Laura knew where they might go. Their only reason for being there was Daniel.
"Daniel, it's time to wake up now," said Laura as she leaned over his bed, holding his hand and scanning his face for signs of life. "Open your eyes."
He lay there, unmoving, the beep still sounding in some torturous rhythm.
"Can you wiggle your fingers? Your toes?"
She stared, but still nothing.
"Just a flicker. Come on, Daniel,"
she said, growing increasingly desperate. She determinedly pulled up a chair, squeezed his fingers hard, too hard probably, but she just wanted to get through to him. Any movement, any sound, just something to tell her he was there, he was trying.
"Please,"
she begged, her voice cracking, silent, frantic tears rolling down her face. By the next day, nothing had changed. The tests had not thrown any more light on why Daniel wasn't regaining consciousness, and he lay there silently, eyes closed, palms down on the sheets. It was the same the next day and the next. Laura had already been making inquiries, calling friends of friends, researching on the internet, and had found out that one of the best specialists in the country worked at the Chelsea and Westminster Hospital in London. After speaking to Dr. Rayner, it became clear that they could request for Daniel to be transferred, something that was arranged quite swiftly. Laura hoped that the move might produce some change in him, but was disappointed. The new specialist said the same. It was impossible to predict when he might come out of his coma, and it began to sink in that it could continue for many weeks or even months, and this sent her spinning into a whirlpool of terror and anguish that threatened to get out of control. She had to stay positive, she reminded herself, a word that was becoming rapidly overused, but it was all she had to cling on to. Her son's life had been reduced to a series of clichés. Take each day as it comes. Just be there for him. Stay positive. After 10 days, life came knocking. Howard had to get back to the office for some urgent meetings. Her PA had tentatively left a message saying she had a few things to pass on whenever Laura was ready. They had to be important, or she wouldn't have bothered her. They fell into a routine. She would go to the office in the morning and work from home in the afternoons, visiting Daniel for at least 2 hours every day. Howard would go in the evenings on the way back from work. Laura had decided to let Cherry see Daniel as well. She was prepared to do anything that might help bring her son out of his coma. If Cherry spoke to him, maybe her voice could trigger something inside his brain, something that would bring him back to her. She was allowed to visit early evenings twice a week, on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Laura gave strict instructions that this was the only time Cherry could visit, and she had to be out by the time Howard arrived at 8. Wondering if the nursing staff was sticking to the rules, she spoke to Howard once about it, and he said he hadn't seen her. Laura had come back to some bad news. The decision-makers at ITV were unwilling to commission a second series of her drama as the ratings had continued to fall, and so regrettably, it wasn't something they could continue with. But they had high hopes for the new crime drama script and were looking forward to seeing it. In the meantime, she was still able to pay staff salaries for now. She'd been on the verge of calling Howard about the decision, wanting someone to talk to about it, but had stopped with the phone in her hand. After a momentary closeness, brought on by their son's accident, they had drifted apart again. Each returned from the hospital with little to report, as neither really thought to talk about what they had said to Daniel. They had been apart for so long, they had separate lives. If Howard tried to discuss his life with Laura, he would have to start from the beginning, and it was the same with her. Laura could never get used to the idea of Daniel lying there in the bed, and her heart tightened every time she saw him. She talked brightly, incessantly, after researching comas in books, the internet, cornering friends of friends who worked in neurology. Reports were to be found where recovering patients could relay full sentences of what had been said to them when they were in their dark place. It was just a matter of time, or so she obstinately believed. The year drew on, and Isabella had her usual Christmas party, carols around the piano and a lot of champagne and mulled wine. She'd been such a good friend since the accident, and had been there every single time Laura had wanted to talk, providing words of encouragement and tissues. She knew Christmas would be a difficult time, and told Laura she understood if she didn't want to come, but Laura felt it was important to keep life as normal as possible, even though she started every day with a heavy pain in her chest. Once she was there, though, she felt like an outsider. She wasn't interested in drinking, and the festive atmosphere never caught on for her. She also felt that people were awkward around her, didn't know how to talk about Daniel, and so most didn't mention him, except maybe to say, "Give him our love," which they would do with a pained, fatalistic expression. This was something that she read to be so desolately pessimistic. It angered her. "He is still alive," she wanted to scream out. "He is still there, a part of me. He hasn't bloody gone yet," she whimpered to herself. After a couple of drawn-out hours, she slipped away home. Then Christmas itself came. She and Howard spent it with Daniel, in the long-term care provision, a special nursing home he'd been moved to. It gave her comfort to be with him, to make sure he wasn't alone. As the new year turned, it seemed joyless and bleak. Every day, fear would attack her when she was doing the most ordinary things, putting on her tights, locking the front door. When? When? She sometimes shouted it out loud when no one was listening, a word that evaporated like vapor as it left her mouth, leaving no trace and no answer. When would he recover? The waiting was torturous. She stared into the black chasm of an unknown distance, but remained agonizingly defiant. She would never give up. 25. Thursday, February 12. It had been more than 5 months since the accident. Tiny signs of spring were appearing. Snowdrops had sprung up in Hyde Park, snuggled around the base of trees. Because London had its own microclimate, all those buildings and people, there were even a few crocuses, splashes of yellow and purple. Laura sat in the back of her cab on the way home from her afternoon meeting. The sun had made a late appearance, and it was above 50 degrees for the first time since October. She felt an urge to get outside, feel the air on her face, and she tapped on the dividing partition between herself and the driver. As she stepped out of the cab, she knew it had been a good idea. The sun was so sweet, and she saw something she hadn't seen in weeks, shadows on the pavement. It had been so long, they seemed slightly strange to the eye, a novelty. It lifted her spirits, which had been frozen in gloom for several months. The ITV meeting had been good. Alison and Sean had read the script of the crime drama and liked it. In fact, they were as committed to the project as ever, and were keen to see the next draft as soon as possible. Assuming the writer went away and satisfactorily wrote all the notes that had been discussed today, Laura felt she might get a green light. The sun and fresh air were helping, but Laura's headache still hung around, threatening to erupt into a migraine. She'd never had one before Daniel's accident, but could now claim at least one a month. She dug into her bag for the tablet she always carried around, but found the packet empty. Knowing the migraine, if it came, would be debilitating, she stopped at a pharmacy and went in to buy some. She waited in line at the counter, concentrating on the shelves behind the assistant, until she found what she was looking for. Then it was her turn. The girl in front of her turned around. It was Cherry. Laura hadn't seen her for months, so it was a shock, even more so because of how she looked. She'd lost weight, but she was also pale with purple shadows under her eyes. The glow that Laura had noticed the first time she'd seen her, that day she'd peered in the real estate window, that glow had gone. Cherry recovered first. "Hello, Laura." "Hello, Cherry." They both stood there, bound together by one man, yet unsure of their own relationship. "I think it's time we had a chat. Don't you?" said Laura. They went to a high street coffee shop, something busy and impersonal. As soon as they found their place in the queue, Laura regretted asking Cherry along. What did she have to say to her? She thoroughly disliked her, and yet she wanted to know what it was like when she visited Daniel. She'd just talked to her enough to satisfy her suspicions, that he was as unresponsive with Cherry as he was with her and Howard, and then she'd make her excuses and leave. They found a table that was covered in sugar grains, and Laura wiped them away with a paper napkin. They sat, and Cherry was clearly not in the mood to strike up conversation as she gazed out the window at the people walking past. Laura contemplated her for a moment. "Shouldn't you be at work?" It came out harsher than she'd intended, accusatory. Cherry gave her a hard stare, and then took a sip of her tea, in no hurry. "It's my day off. I work Saturdays." Chastened, Laura realized something else. "But you see Daniel today? Thursdays?" "Yes," So you come into town especially? This irritated Cherry on two fronts. Tooting was town, albeit farther out, and of course she did. Yes, Laura, he's my boyfriend. They fell into silence for a moment, and Cherry went back to staring out the window. How have you found the visits? Asked Laura. Cherry shrugged. I worry I'm boring him with talk of houses. Do you think he's listening? I don't know. Sometimes. Laura was quick. Why, what's he done? Nothing, I mean, I don't want to get your hopes up or anything. It's more of a feeling. He's too special. Too interested in things, in people, not to listen. Her eyes glazed with tears, and she quickly rubbed them away. They don't know when he's going to wake up, do they?
No. I miss him.
Her voice was so small, so lost, that Laura's heart cracked. For just a moment. Cherry pulled herself together.
Sorry. I know you do too.
She lowered her head, fiddled with her teaspoon, and then looked up again. And I'm sorry for taking him away. And on your weekend too. If I could only turn back the clock. Suddenly she was sobbing loudly, conspicuously, and Laura stared, horrified. Then, as other customers glanced over, she grabbed a paper napkin and thrust it at Cherry.
Here, dry your eyes. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry.
But she managed to stem the tears. Laura noticed that she looked even more of a mess than before.
Sometimes, continued Cherry, sometimes I feel like I'm going to fall apart, bit by bit, find parts of me dropped onto the floor.
She attempted a smile. Laura watched her. She wasn't sure about this new, repentant, grieving Cherry. She didn't trust her. This was the girl who'd lied and manipulated her way into their lives, thrown herself into a swimming pool and insinuated that Laura had pushed her. She had deliberately ruined Laura's birthday weekend, and then had taken her son on a trip that had put him in the hospital for 5 months. But then, she did seem rather upset. Perhaps, after all, she had a conscience.
Maybe you should go home.
I can't. I'm waiting until 6. She meant the time Laura had allowed her to see Daniel.
Look, I'm sure he won't mind your not going tonight. Howard will be there later anyway. I can't, I'll be honest with you, Cherry. You look a state. Go home, have a bath, and get some rest. In fact, why don't you take some time out? When's the last time you had a proper break?
What do you mean?
A week away, a change of scene. Some time when you don't think about Daniel.
I always think about him. Laura began to get irritated, and could feel her compassion wearing thin.
For heaven's sake, get yourself some sun. Take a holiday or something. Daniel will no doubt be in the same state when you get back.
Do you think? Laura reluctantly nodded. Cherry gave her a watery smile.
I think you might be right. I could do with getting away.
Laura nodded again, then stood.
Goodbye, Cherry.
Goodbye, Laura. Cherry watched her leave, and when Laura had disappeared down the road, Cherry decided to get a chocolate brownie from the counter. After all, she had something to celebrate. The truth was, she was exhausted. Exhausted from visiting, from waiting, from wondering. She wasn't sleeping well, and the doctor had prescribed some Zopiclone, which had helped at first, but the pills left her listless. At first, just after the accident, she'd missed Daniel terribly. He'd become such a big part of her life, and they'd spent so much time together. But then, after a while, the sadness spread beyond him. She was also feeling a terrible loss for her new life, for her future. Things had changed rapidly since the accident. There were no more dinners at nice restaurants, no staying in his swanky flat. She winced every time she thought of that beautiful, expensive place going to waste, empty with no one to enjoy it. She'd even had to give the car back the day Howard returned from Wales. He'd phoned her at the office and asked her to park it outside his house and drop the keys through the letterbox. Christmas had been utterly miserable. Wendy had invited her back to Croydon, and it had been just the two of them around the fold-up table with a turkey crown and paper hats, which she had removed at the earliest opportunity. Every time she saw Daniel, she urged him to hurry up and get out of his coma so they could be together again, continue with the life she'd planned for them. But more than 5 long months had passed, and so far, nothing had changed. Cherry had religiously visited him twice a week, every week, when she could quite easily have made excuses not to, but she hadn't, and the vigil was beginning to take its toll. She started to wonder how long she would be expected to stay girlfriend to a man who couldn't respond to her in any shape or form. She was young, she had plans, and the longer she sat by that bedside, the more she wondered what other opportunities were drifting away. She'd planned on getting engaged in about 4 months' time, a year since she'd met Daniel, and if that didn't happen, which it didn't look like it would, then she'd have to start all over again. When she thought like this, she fell into an agitated despair, mourning what could have been. It was made worse by the fact that work wasn't going too well lately. She was too clever for it, and it bored her. She had to work extra hard to keep up her agent's persona, but she felt trapped. She couldn't leave, because if she didn't have a job, she'd lose her flat and Croydon loomed. She could look for another position, but she'd only been there a year, and it wouldn't look good on her resume. What she was desperate for was a break, a chance to rest, take stock, get a new perspective on things. She'd saved a bit and could book something cheap, a last-minute trip. But she hadn't wanted to disappear on a 2-week holiday to Mexico and come back all tanned and relaxed, because she didn't want Laura thinking she was callous. Now, however, she had permission. She smiled. The tears had come at the right time. 26. Tuesday, February 24. 2 weeks later, Laura got a phone call from the nursing home. Her heart was hammering, but the doctor's message was not the one she'd been hoping for.
"Mrs. Cavendish, I'm afraid I have some bad news."
"What's happened?"
"I'm afraid Daniel's no longer able to breathe unaided. He's been readmitted to the hospital, and they've had to put him on the ventilator."
Her world crashed yet again. She was first at the hospital. The specialist, Dr. Murray, came to speak to her immediately and explained that at 9:20 a.m, Daniel had stopped breathing. As a consequence, he suffered a cardiac arrest. The team had successfully resuscitated him, but he was now back on a ventilator. Howard arrived in the middle of it all, and she listened to the report again, the words digging like knives in her heart. It was as if Daniel, after all this time, was slipping away, but she couldn't understand why.
"What caused it?"
she asked Dr. Murray. Laura was so desperate to make sense of the change.
"He's contracted pneumonia. I'm afraid that patients who are in his condition are highly susceptible to it."
Laura lashed out from distress and frustration.
"He can't be perfectly fine one day and the next get pneumonia and have a heart attack. It doesn't make sense."
Dr. Murray remained patient.
"Mrs. Cavendish, he's not perfectly fine. He's in a coma. It's often difficult or impossible to predict the outcome of such an injury."
It didn't satisfy her. She felt as if she'd taken her eye off the ball, just routinely visiting and waiting, hoping. She should have been doing something.
"We have to wait and see if he can regain the full use of his lungs," he continued. "We'll try taking him off the ventilator again later today, and if that doesn't work, we'll adjust it to encourage him to make more effort to breathe. But the machine will still support him."
"What if he has another arrest?"
Dr. Murray paused.
"He's been in a coma for a long time. We have to think about what's in his best interests."
A growing horror took hold of Laura.
"You mean, you might just let him die?"
she said incredulously.
"Not necessarily. If it's still your wish, we'll do our best to resuscitate him."
"Yes, it is my wish,"
said Laura, tears springing. When they were left alone, Howard and Laura sat in silence for a moment.
"They're doing their best," said Howard.
"Are they?"
He was slightly shocked.
"Yes, of course."
"Oh, Howard, I don't mean to say they're negligent or anything, and I know there are some amazing doctors here. Murray's one of the best, after all. But I just feel we've been blindly letting this go on when we should have been keeping an eye on things."
She went to sit beside him and held her hands together in her lap.
"We've been here before, remember? What if we'd... if I'd taken Rose to a hospital the minute she didn't take her first feeding?"
"Now hold on."
"I know what you're going to say. What everyone has always told me, that I did what I could, I wasn't to blame. But those what-if questions don't just go away. And I promised Howard, I promised that I'd always look after him. I'd watch out for him, I'd ask the questions that he wasn't able to. I'd step up. He was my second chance."
He rested a hand on hers.
"So, what do you suggest?"
"There's another guy. He's American. I didn't do anything because I thought we were in safe hands. We are in safe hands. But I want to increase our options. He's a new appointment at a private hospital in town, one that specializes in neurological conditions. Oh, I can't bear it, Howard. What if we're missing something? What if we've allowed ourselves to become complacent? I just think we should see him. Get him to see Daniel.
Won't that mean moving him?
Yes, but there's everything in that hospital that there is here. And this specialist, too. Dr. Bell, his name is. I can make a call, and I bet it's just a question of authorizing Chelsea and Westminster to move him, and they'll take care of the rest.
Is it safe to move him, when he's so ill?
We can ask.
Howard considered what his wife was saying, and Laura mistook his silence for reluctance. Her voice cracked.
If he doesn't make it, Howard, I don't think I'll be able to live with myself, knowing I didn't try everything to do the absolute best for him. This Dr. Bell might say the same thing, but let's at least get another opinion.
Howard looked at her. They were two people lost, looking for any sort of rescue. As much of a long shot as it was better than staying marooned on the island.
Let's go and speak to Dr. Murray.
They could tell he didn't think it would make much difference, but he didn't prevent it, and Daniel was moved to the Wellington Hospital by ambulance 2 days later. Laura was on her way to see Daniel when she remembered that Cherry was due to visit later that evening, as it was Thursday. She would be wondering what was going on, as it had been a couple of days now since Daniel had left the nursing home. She made a call and spoke to one of the nurses she knew well, but was surprised to hear that Cherry hadn't been in touch for a while.
"She's gone away," said the nurse. "Cancun for 2 weeks, did she not say?"
Laura remembered their conversation.
"Oh, yes, yes, of course. When did she leave?"
"Last Monday, I think."
Laura was hopeful at her first appointment with Dr. Bell, but his assessment, unfortunately, was much the same. Daniel wasn't responding to being weaned off the ventilator. 3 days after being admitted, he had another cardiac arrest. Laura and Howard were called to the hospital, and Dr. Bell gently warned that the situation did not look good.
"I'm afraid it's extremely possible that he may have another arrest very soon, and when they continue like this, it's very difficult to keep the patient alive."
"How long?"
asked Laura.
"It's hard to say for sure, but it could be as soon as 24 or 48 hours.
Laura returned to Daniel's spacious, sunny private room and sat quietly by his bed. She'd tried. She'd really done all she could, but it seemed it wasn't enough. She took his hand and her heart broke. Brittle for so long, it shattered into 1,000 tiny pieces that splintered and tore at her insides. That was it. That was all she had left of him. After 24 years, she had perhaps 1 or 2 days of him, just lying there, pale, unresponsive, helpless. She suddenly had an overwhelming sense that she didn't want to share him. It was the same when he was first born. She couldn't stand people holding him for too long. It felt unnatural being parted from him, even though he was just across the room. She wasn't able to sit still. She would flex her arms agitatedly, fight the impulse to just pluck him back from Howard's cooing mother, who always left Daniel reeking of her perfume so that she had to bathe him. She wanted him back in her arms. She wanted to cherish every second of these last days, eke them out, even though she knew the sand would be running through the hourglass. But Cherry was back tomorrow, and when she heard the news, she would want to see him. Laura couldn't stand the idea of her being near her beloved son. She didn't even want to hear her ask to visit him, or have her come to the hospital and beg the staff. Cherry had taken so much of Daniel away from her. The thought of her encroaching on these last few hours filled her with a desperate, raging fury. But she knew Cherry would. Deep down, Laura knew that even if she asked Cherry to stay away, even if she explained how she felt about needing to be alone with him, Cherry would still want to come. The finality of it suddenly hit Laura. Clutching his hand, she wept on his bed like she'd never wept before. It was late when she got back home, and Moses, unaware of all that was going on in her wretched life, rubbed himself around her legs. He was hungry. Laura had come back to feed him, but also to pack a few essentials. The cab was waiting outside for her, ready to take her back to the hospital. Howard was there now, but he would take a break when she arrived, and she planned on spending the night by her son's bedside. She opened a tin of cat food and had barely put it on the floor when Moses was wolfing it down, purring as he did so. Next, she went upstairs to grab what she'd need for the night. She packed some pyjamas, a toothbrush, and wash things, also a change of clothes. It came to her in a breathtaking moment. She stood bolt upright in front of the wardrobe, clutching a fresh shirt as a cold shiver raced through her body. This was it. It was bleak, hideous. But it was a way out. The only way out. She paced up and down, shaking, wondering if she could do it. But now, the thought was in her mind. Her feet had been uprooted, and she was carried along in a current she couldn't fight. She would do it tomorrow. 27. Monday, March 2. I love my son. That was all that counted. It didn't matter that she was about to do something heinous. An opportunity had been granted to her, a beacon of light through the devastating last few months, and Laura knew she had to take that opportunity. She'd agonized over it for hours, but now that the decision was final, she felt a wave of terror at what she had to say. The words that were going to break her into pieces. This was the first time. She briefly considered rehearsing it, but the words, the word, wouldn't form properly in her head. Her instinct was to bat it away violently. Crossing to the sink in the ensuite bathroom, just off the private room at the hospital, she looked at herself in the mirror hanging above. A brief check that her soul was still intact through her worn blue eyes reassured her further. No flashing green irises, no demon-like pinhole pupils. She looked more tired, though, and she was shocked to see how much she'd aged. There were more lines around her eyes and mouth. There was also a sadness, a haunting despair that she had desperately tried to keep at bay with this new expensive hospital, the best doctors she could find, and brittle hope. For a moment, she forgot what she was about to do, and thought only about what was soon to happen. The heartbreak was a physical force that made her double over, clutching the sink. After a few seconds, she stood. Nothing had changed. Cherry was back today. Laura had checked, and the flights from Mexico usually arrived at Heathrow early in the morning. She looked at her watch. Maybe she'd be back in her flat in Tooting by now. A lump formed in her throat as she held her phone, but she swallowed hard. She had to get this right. Any mother would do the same, she reminded herself again and again, a mantra to get her through it. She dialed the number carefully. She went cold, then clammy, in alternative waves, buffeted around by her agony. Her life was soon to end, the life that had meaning. Holding the phone with two hands, trying to stop their shaking, she waited for the rings in her ear to be terminated. At last, they stopped, and the voice that answered sounded curious, unknowing. No wonder, as Laura had never rung her before and her number wouldn't be recognized. Hello? Is that Cherry? Speaking. Cherry, it's Laura Cavendish. There was a brief silence, while Laura knew that Cherry was running through her brain, trying to work out why she was calling. Cherry, I'm afraid I'm ringing with some bad news. Daniel died a few days ago. Oh, God. It hurt, it hurt. She squeezed her eyes tightly, but it didn't stop the flow of tears. There was a stunned silence from the other end of the phone. Then, what? He had a heart attack. One of several, actually. And he was admitted back to the Chelsea in Westminster. They were unable to save him. More silence. I know it's a lot to take in. Why didn't you call me? I know you wanted to get away for some rest, and it didn't seem fair. You'd only just gone away. I'm sorry. It was a difficult decision. But I thought it best. I see. It was a statement of someone who didn't know what to say, who still hadn't fully processed what she was being told. Laura caught a glimpse of her reflection in the mirror. The anguish it showed on her face was real. Her heart was hammering. She just wanted it to be over. When's the funeral? Laura felt her chest tighten in apprehension. We've already had it. It was family only. If she could have seen Cherry's face at that moment, she might have given herself away with guilt. The ultimate banishment from Daniel's life had hurt Cherry badly. When she put the phone down, she felt empty. No relief, no gleeful triumph at having got Cherry off her back. But she also felt a kind of peace. Now she could go and say goodbye to Daniel. The doctors didn't know when his last moment might be, and she didn't want it to take them by surprise, before she'd said all she wanted to say to him. She took a moment to compose herself and splash some cold water on her face. Then she opened the bathroom door and went back into his room, where he lay on the bed, in the same position he'd been in the last few months. She was alone with him for a couple of hours, as Howard had gone home to get some fresh clothes. She pulled up a chair and, looking out the window, saw that it was one of those early spring days that was a kindness from nature, an unexpected gift. She suddenly wanted Daniel to have it too, and she opened the window. The air that came in was fresh but not cold, full of life, and she could hear birds singing. She sat back down again and held his hand.
"It's a lovely day."
She couldn't manage any more, and stroked his hair to give herself a moment, thinking she had to do better than this or she'd ruin it. Now was not the time to fall apart. She tried again.
"Just in case I don't get the chance to say this to you later. In case..."
She stopped abruptly. She'd been about to say, "In case you have to leave suddenly." But something had stopped her. Some maternal protective mechanism. She had thought long and hard over the last few months about whether Daniel could hear what was being said to him, and she thought, hoped, he did. She'd been about to tell him about all their memories, everything that she loved about him, but knew now that she couldn't. What if he didn't know he was dying, but could hear everything she said? Laura shuddered in horror. He'd be stuck, listening to the end of his life being pronounced, but not able to communicate, to ask for comfort. It would be like being buried alive. She climbed awkwardly onto his bed and gently laid her cheek next to his, being careful not to dislodge any of the plastic tubes taped to various parts of him. Then she took his hand. In her head, she relived two memories. One was of a baby girl, a perfect little person with blue eyes and fair hair who'd died in her arms just a few days after she'd been born. The other was of an equally perfect little boy, who when he was small would wake and climb into her bed with his toy monkey, snuggling up to her and sharing one of the monkey's ears, the softest, most treasured part of the toy with her. They would lie there, warm and close, whispering secrets to one another.
"Daniel, I hope you're not scared. Not of anything. Because you don't need to be. I'm here. I always will be, no matter what. And I'm staying now until... I'm staying."
28. Cherry hung up and let the phone rest on the sofa next to her. Daniel was dead. She couldn't take it in. He'd died. He had vanished. He was no more. While she was on holiday. She suddenly realized she hadn't even asked Laura the exact day. What had she been doing on that day? Lying lazily on a sunbed on the beach? Wandering around Chichen Itza? Or maybe even having dinner with Elliot? It had been a fleeting thing. That much she'd made clear. But she needed the relief spending time with him had given her. He'd approached her in their hotel bar and found that they were both travelling alone and their holidays overlapped by 4 days. They ended up spending pretty much all of those 4 days and nights together. Cherry didn't feel guilty. She saw it more as a necessary healing balm for the last few months. Then he left and she got on with the rest of her trip. It disturbed her that she didn't know when Daniel had died, that she couldn't match an event of such magnitude to a moment in her own life. She almost called Laura back, there and then, but as soon as she had the phone in her hand, she dropped it. She didn't feel up to asking questions yet. It was all still so unreal. A movement at the window caught her eye. People walking past, going about their lives, oblivious to what was going on inside her flat. She jumped up suddenly, went to make a cup of tea. As she was holding the kettle under the tap, it hit her. She burst into tears, great racking sobs, and dumped the kettle in the sink. Then suddenly she remembered that the next-door neighbours could see in if their back door was open, and the flat above them could see in if they looked down at a certain angle. She recoiled, hating her flat, tooting, poor man's London, and the way people all lived on top of each other. Instead, she went into the bedroom, it was a little more private, and lay down, fully clothed, on the bed. Daniel was dead. She thought she'd felt lonely, cast adrift when he was ill, but she realised that was nothing compared to now. She'd always believed he'd recover. She had read numerous accounts, reports on the internet, studied it in books and journals, until she felt she could pass as a doctor herself. But instead he'd left her, and her new life, the one she'd planned, had disintegrated. She couldn't even say goodbye. She shrank inside, remembering Laura's words, "family only." She wasn't included. Was she not good enough, not worthy, not rich enough? Yet again she'd been slighted. It was like Nicholas all over again. Neither Laura nor Howard recognized her as a proper girlfriend, as someone who had meant anything to Daniel. Where was he buried? Or had he been cremated? Where were his ashes? She didn't know the answers to any of these questions, and was left in a vacuum of ignorance. She felt a sudden, violent anger toward Laura for keeping everything to herself. Laura had cut her from his life, and she, Cherry, was stuck in a dead-end job that she was growing to hate, with no escape on the horizon. She couldn't go through with it all again. She realized that Daniel had made the job palatable, not just because he would eventually lead her out of it, but because he was what she looked forward to at the end of the day. Talking to him, exchanging stories about the people they'd each had to deal with, he as a trainee doctor at the hospital, and she as a real estate agent. The way he'd held her and kissed her had made her feel good, feel as if she had value. Now that was all gone. She was a nobody again. The people she'd aspired to be like had unceremoniously kicked to the door in her face. In the end, Laura had won. 29. Laura didn't leave the hospital, fearing that if she did, Daniel would die when she wasn't there. She called Mrs. Moore to put aside some clean clothes and sent a cab to pick them up. At night, she slept on a temporary bed next to his that the nurses had put up for her. Howard came as much as he could, but his work meant that he had to spend at least a couple of hours in the office every day. The nurses said that often they could tell when a patient didn't have very long and would tell Laura so she could call her husband if that time came. 4 days in, she noticed that some of the flowers were dying. It depressed her that they should mirror what was going on in the bed, and she plucked them out with distaste. She didn't even want them in the bin in the room and took them outside to dispose of elsewhere. As she closed the door behind her and started to walk down the corridor, she heard something, a deviation from the rhythm of the beeps that had become as familiar to her as her own heartbeat. A nurse rushed past her.
"Jesus," thought Laura. "He's died. He's died as soon as I left the room."
She let out an anguished wail and ran back in, rushing up to the bed, desperate to hold him, for it not to be too late. Dr. Bell had come in a split second after her.
"Mrs. Cavendish, if you could just give us some room,"
he said, and the nurse firmly took her by the elbow and moved her aside as he ran his eyes over Daniel and the monitors.
"He's trying to breathe."
Laura stared incredulously.
"He's what?"
"Breathe. On his own."
Dr. Bell smiled and looked at the readouts.
3 breaths in the last minute. Well, well, well."
She shook her head.
"I don't understand."
"He's breathing independently, some of the time. It's good news," he said cautiously. "I think we'll trial him with the ventilator. Change it so it reduces the amount of work it has to do. Let's see if he can take on more."
"Oh, my God."
"He'll be carefully monitored over the next 24 hours, as we see how much his lungs want to take on."
"Then what?"
"Let's just deal with the next few hours first," said Dr. Bell kindly.
Laura was ecstatic for a few minutes, and then she'd swing back to despair again. It was just a cruel trick, medicine playing with her emotions, offering a strange grasp at life before Daniel left her for good. She stayed glued to his bedside, watching him, staring at his chest, her eyes willing on every breath that he seemed to take. She asked the nurse exactly what each of the numbers on the machine meant, which were related to his lungs, and got obsessed with willing it to register another breath. She barely slept that night, lying close to him on her makeshift bed, getting up every hour or so just to check the monitors. Early the next morning, she and Howard waited impatiently for Dr. Bell's prognosis.
"He's doing extremely well. In fact, I think we should take him off the ventilator."
Laura turned to Howard, and they exchanged radiant, tense smiles, hardly daring to believe what was happening.
"I'm just going to remove the ET tube."
As he disconnected the ventilator, then gently took out the endotracheal tube that fed down into Daniel's lungs, Daniel suddenly coughed, and his eyes opened.
"Oh, my God," said Laura, her hands to her face.
"Daniel, can you hear me?"
said Dr. Bell, placing an oxygen mask on him.
"You're perfectly safe. You're in the hospital. My name is Dr. Bell, and I'm here to look after you."
Daniel stared around wildly, uncomprehendingly.
"Don't panic. Everything's fine. I'm going to hold your hand, and I want you to blink if you can hear me."
For a few seconds, nothing happened. Then he blinked, and Laura was filled with a joy that weakened her even as it exploded through her body and tears poured uncontrollably down her face.
"You're in the hospital, and your mum and dad are here."
"I'm here. I'm here,"
said Laura, wiping away her tears as she went to him and took his other hand. He looked at her, but she wasn't sure if he could see.
"You've had an accident, but you're getting better," said Dr. Bell.
Daniel's eyes closed again, and Laura panicked.
"What's happened?"
"It's perfectly normal. He'll come round gradually, regain his orientation over time."
"So he's okay?"
We'll know more later. Maybe over the next few days and weeks, but this is very good.
Daniel's recovery started slowly, and Laura at first was constantly reminded of how much he couldn't do, how it took him 2 weeks just to sit up in bed, how he still needed to be fed, how the sores on his body and lips took so long to heal. But gradually she noticed little parts of him coming back to her. A smile, a hoarse word, a moment of lucidity. And after each of these, she was amazed at the progress he'd made.
"It's because he's young, and he wants to get better," said Dr. Bell,
and Laura felt an immense pride that Daniel was so determined. She would stare at him in wonder, amazed by the transformation. The doctors repeatedly reminded her that there was a long way to go. He could still have some damage to the brain. His memory could be affected. Laura, though, was filled with euphoria and brushed these warnings aside. So caught up was she in his recuperation that at first she forgot about Cherry. Then, in the kitchen one evening, preparing a meal for herself and Howard, it came back to her like a steam train, fast, thundering, flattening everything in its path.
"I told Cherry he was dead."
It was a huge problem, but something she didn't want to deal with at that moment. All her thoughts were taken up with Daniel's recovery and the work involved, the physiotherapy, the speech therapy, the time spent just talking to him, encouraging him. She didn't want that interrupted or complicated in any way, and Cherry was most definitely a complication. Laura had a vision of Cherry sucking the new life out of him, telling lies, emotionally manipulating him with her eye on the prize, and she felt a wave of fear. Although recovering well, he was nowhere near his optimum strength, and Laura pushed aside the guilt and told herself it was the best thing for him that Cherry was kept away for now. She went down to the den to get some wine for their meal and saw Howard thrashing out laps in the pool. She realized she'd have to think of something to tell him, something to explain Cherry's absence. Thank God he hadn't asked about her. Presumably he'd also been so involved in Daniel, he hadn't thought to. What on earth could she say? She felt panicked as she remembered what she'd done, the lie she'd told, and quickly moved through the pool room to the cellar and grabbed a chilled bottle of Chablis from the fridge. As she made her way back upstairs, she saw something wet on the floor, a patch of glistening tiles, and she bent down to investigate. It seemed to be water, but it hadn't come from the pool. A languid drip fell onto her hair,